Well, everybody, I'm Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. On Monday, April 25th, 2022, and it's a pleasure to have you with us today. And we know a lot of people listen on the archives. Perhaps you're listening on the archives. Who knows? All right? So whatever day it is, I hope it's a good one for you. We're going to archive this show like we always do over at ace-ed.org, ace-ed.org. That's the home website of our American Consortium for Equity in Education. And over there lives our online journal, our award-winning journal called Equity and Access. It is online. The current issue all about SEL and equity is on there right now. We're putting together the next issue, which will be the May-June, and that will be coming out in probably next week, and it'll be up on there. So you can still always catch this current issue, but the new one will be up probably in mid-next week. So we're right on schedule for that, we're thrilled to say, okay? We'll archive every podcast over there. You can link at ace-ed.org to seltoday.org, which is our SEL Resource Center, Social Emotional Learning. And then also we have our new thing, which is www.teacher-retention.com, teacher-retention.com. That's a big challenge. You all know that. And if we don't get teachers like you to stay and continue their good work, we're going to be in big trouble. So we're talking all about that. Teacherretention.com. Again, everything linked at ace-ed.org. Today, all right, we've got Andy Calkins with us. And Andy co-leads Next Generation Learning Challenges. And he's going to tell us all about this. And a new report that they have about how schools were resilient in terms of COVID and were able to take all those things, if I'm reading this correct, Andy will help me, okay, take all those things sure. We want kids to have. Hi, Andy, and make it happen. So, Andy, good morning. It's Larry Jacobs here. How you doing?
Good morning, Larry. I'm doing fine, thanks. Glad to be on your show.
Pleasure to have you here, sir. And where are you in Boston? Where are you? I see a 978 number.
Yeah, I'm north of Boston in the town of Gloucester, recently made famous by the Oscar-winning movie Coda.
Yeah, also
old fishing town.
And actually, it's got one of my favorite lines because I live in Maine. I'm talking to you from Maine today. Okay, it's also got my favorite line from A Perfect Storm: Gloucester. They're always from Gloucester. Okay.
Yeah, and if you're really from Gloucester, then you spit after you say the word Gloucester.
Gloucester. You know. Okay, I love it. The Gloucester.
Exactly.
Fisherman. Gloucester. They're always from Gloucester. So is Andy today. Okay, great town, by the way. Home of the Gloucester fishermen, which Andy is not. Do you eat fish? Do you like fish, Andy?
I love fish, and I love
There you
fishing.
Go.
Although I can't say I don't have pictures of myself with giant tuna or anything like that.
Yeah, with the slicker, the yellow slicker with the hat with the big steering
wheel. All of that, right?
All of that. Okay, it's great to have you here, my friend, and I'm thrilled you're here. Next Generation Learning Challenges. Are you the director of the? Tell everybody just what that is. I just want to get what that is.
Yeah. Right. And
then we'll get
well
into the report,
ask,
but I want to just get in what that is. Yeah.
Sure. We were launched 11 years ago. We have this ungainly name, Next Generation Learning Challenges. What the heck does that mean? But in their wisdom at the time, the Gates and Hewlett Foundations were searching for a way to help the field to reimagine itself. They had a momentary flash of donor epiphany and said, we're not going to figure that out here in our conference rooms, what deeper student-centered learning, next-gen learning is. It's going to be the educators who do that. And so let's create an independent nonprofit that is going to run a whole series of competitive grant challenges, and educators will create the schools of their dreams. And so that's what we've done. We've distributed close to 100 million in the last decade to educators who are doing exactly that. which means I have the best job in the world, you know, because I get to
work with
all
money.
These insane people.
I love it. I'm flipping money like that. The car, like, all right. So what? Now let me ask you a dumb question, okay? Don't be insulted. Mm-hmm. What are you? Are you a professor of education? Are you an expert in leading nonprofits? What are you, Andy Calkins?
On my tombstone, a friend of mine told me last year, he said, I want to see this, Andy Calkins, tribal leader. I think what that means is, I am not a former practitioner. I've never been a principal or a district leader or anything like that. But I have worked in education and mostly around nonprofit managing my whole life. I sort of just help connect and catalyze tribes of people to do the best work they possibly can.
That's good. That's good. And to me, that's all good news, because we have enough of everybody in education, all right, trying to do that. Yeah. And to bring in outside thoughts is just, it's just wonderful. I love that. I'm just curious as to how you fit into that. Okay. So now you got all the you're like Scrooge McDuck. It's somewhere in Gloucester, there's like Andy Calkins' money bin, okay? And you sit there on tops of piles. Like, remember Scrooge McDuck would sit there with all the coins and the dollars and all that sort of thing, waiting to give it out, okay? You developed Next Generation Learning Challenges 11 years ago. All right, and so you're moving right along. You're talking to educators, superintendents, principals, teachers. COVID hits, okay? And from what I understand, you guys have researched this over the last couple of years, and you created a report that's called What Made Them So Prepared? And that report, okay, is talking about school districts that were better prepared, in your opinion, through your research, than other school districts. Am I on the right track here?
You're on the right track. You've done your homework, Larry.
Thank you, my friend. Okay. So let me ask the simple – I'll ask it right the way you wanted me to ask you. What's the project about? How'd you figure out where these districts are? Was that before or after? Talk about this, okay? What was it you were trying to learn? I'm going to read off your website, okay, which is nextgenlearning.org, okay, a couple of phrases we all know: agency, creativity, critical thinking, collaborative problem solving, and caring. All right, agency, creativity, critical thinking, collaborative problem solving, and caring. All right, these are things we want to get in kids. That's the essence of a lot of the challenges we're facing. There's an article, by the way, just today in the Boston Globe about some more challenges that the school districts are facing, if you haven't read it yet. Okay, and by the way, we're talking national here. We want kids to have these traits. Let's talk about school districts and these traits. Put those traits into COVID and how we got resilient from it. Go ahead, Andy.
So I can remember almost the exact moment when this project was hatched. It was in late spring, early summer 2020. We had convened about 20 organizations sort of in our space, the deeper student-centered learning space, for every other Friday, like, you know, beer storms, we call them, you know, at end of the day on Friday. Let's all get together and talk about, you know, what just happened and how we can be useful in this moment, because every educator we were working with was going completely nuts, trying to, you know, totally reimagine what they were doing. And all around us, we were seeing two things. There's this like prevailing story here in Massachusetts, in the local news and what I was seeing nationally, of a whole lot of districts and the people in them all basically saying, well, we're waiting for guidance, you know, from the feds, from the state, you know, and when the guidance comes through, then we'll know, you know, what to do. And, that is such a metaphor for every kid's experience of public school. You know, I'm waiting to see whether this is going to be on the test. I'm waiting to see, you know, don't challenge me to be creatively inventive here. Just give me the instructions, and then, you know, that's how school works. I know how to play the game. You know, we all know that's the experience of far too many kids in public schools, and this is how their organizations were playing it out. Meanwhile, we and eight other organizations, and you and your listeners probably know them all. You know, it's Spring Point and Education Reimagined and Christensen
mm-hmm,
Institute
yeah.
and Leap Innovation, so on. We all said, you know, while we're reading about all this in the news reports, we're also hearing from schools and districts in our various networks that they, you know, they're reacting differently. We're hearing stories about how they felt ready for this. They felt prepared. You know, if COVID presented itself as the sort of the ultimate test for 21st century skills, you know, can you be collaboratively and creatively adaptive in this moment of crisis? Isn't that what we're all trying to teach kids to be and to do? You know, and so these schools and districts were saying, yep, can't talk to you right now because we're busy doing it, but this is how we're responding. And so we said, you know, nine of those organizations said, we got to tell the story. We should put together a project, get some funding
mm-hmm.
for it, and then spend a year, 2021, researching
mm-hmm.
The schools and districts we can sort of hand pick. And this report is the result of all that.
Where were these districts? Because, of course, I have to say, you know, a lot of the work I did all through the pandemic, and everybody did a great job. Please do not misunderstand the statement, but it was pretty chaotic, especially at the beginning.
Totally.
And,
yes.
Yeah.
And all
what
these
you're saying is
say,
a lot of districts settled down quickly, or a lot of schools, however you want to say that, and figured it out. Okay. Who were? Can I ask who they were? Where were
yes,
they?
Yes, all over the country.
Just give me a couple examples. Your favorites. I love that.
Yeah. Well, two favorite districts that we studied a lot were St. Vrain Valley, which is sort of exurban Denver. They're about an hour and a half outside of Denver.
What's the name of
A valley regional group, St. Vrain, V-R-A-I-N. And then Sunnyside, Arizona, near Tucson. These are both districts. Well, you know, Sunnyside is like 80% kids of color, Latino mostly. St. Vrain, 40%.
That's that district that's kind of incorporated within Tucson, if I'm not mistaken. I've had them on the show.
I think that's right. Yes.
Yeah.
Did you? Good.
Yeah.
Okay. So then you know them. So Sunnyside is a like super exemplar of what we think of as the headline for this research, which is that there are some places out there that, you know, the future is here. It's just not evenly distributed. Some places they have
a great line.
Reimagined.
What a great line.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
They have reimagined student success. Right. I mean, there's like all these communities out there who claim to have reimagined success and they have fancy graphics and it's all, you know, it's good. It's a good first step and all of that. Some of them have understood the fundamental reimagining of their entire learning model and roles of kids and adults and everything else that is necessary. If you're really going to say, we are all about graduating kids who are resilient, caring, collaborative, inventive, problem-solving, lifelong learners. How is that going to happen if the adults around them aren't reflecting those same attributes in the ways that they work together? And so in a place like Sunnyside, their learning vision is not only their powerful, deeper student learning model, it's also their operating model. It's the way they do stuff. You know, and so, you know, you can walk into a district like that or St. Vrain and ask the adults and they'll say, we work in this is how we roll here. You know, in St. Vrain, when COVID hit, what they came to understand quickly was that their primary role needed to shift. The first thing that had to happen is, they needed to become the food bank for the entire valley, you know, because in their set of communities, that was the need. And they were the only organization with the logistics and person power necessary to do this. And so that's what they did. You know, they increased the number of meals that they were serving like 20-fold or something, you know, right away. And then because they're chain-frained and their learning model is their operating model, you know, they could shift all these roles. You know, they took all the specialists, the art teachers and the music teachers and everybody else, you know, and turned them into lost student trackers. You know? And so they used the food bank. You know, they were getting every family, including the 30% who, like, those kids were not enrolling online and they had no idea where they were and so on, but they need food. So they're all coming in to pick up their food. And so they would use all these, you know, reshaped, jobbed people to, like, one by one by one, find the kids who had been lost and get them the technology that they needed and make sure that they were, you know, safe and at home and all of that. That's what a resilient problem-solving organization that's like mission-focused does. They're not waiting for guidance, right? They're seeing what the problem is, and then they, you know, brainstorm a bunch of solutions and they try a bunch out and here's the one that works. So let's go deep on that, and they do that all in a week. You know,
let's look at St. Vrain again. Outside of Denver, right? About an hour outside of Denver.
Yeah.
Is that correct?
Yeah.
Which way? Yeah. By the way, I'm curious. There's 2.5 ways, three and a half ways to go.
Right.
Yeah.
If you are in Denver and you go towards Boulder and a little bit to the right of Boulder, so to the right,
so
of
a little
the
bit, a little northeast.
Yes.
Basically.
That's right. Yeah.
Okay.
So, Longmont is the sort of biggest.
Oh, I know Longmont very well. Okay. That's St. Vrain District.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah.
All right. I've been to Longmont many times. All right. So, therefore, who did that? Okay. Let's use them.
Yeah.
How did that happen so quickly and so smartly? Was it the superintendent who just grabbed the reins and let it go? Was it a committee? Was it the school board? How'd they get set up so quickly? In your opinion, what'd your research show?
Yeah, I love you, Larry, because you're asking made them so prepared. That's the title of the whole friggin' project.
Exactly.
Yeah.
What made them so prepared?
They would say, they did tell us, what made us so prepared is the last 17 years of rewiring how we do things here, what our relationship is with our community, how our adults are working, you know, together and with the kids, how our people regard the roles that they fill and the mission-driven fluidity with which they, like, regard those roles. You need me to do something completely different that I've never done before in my life? Okay, when do I start? You know, that's how they do it. And so they would say, this is not something that, you know, it's not a project you can implement over a year. This took years and years of constant nurturing and development, and it is all about, you know, when you use a phrase like culture building, healthy culture building, that sounds sort of squishy and soft. It is anything.
Not really.
You know, the St. Vrain people will say, you know what, strong and healthy culture without the systems to support it isn't going to last long, and it's probably not that healthy to begin with. You know, and so they said, look, over the 17 years, we have built a really strong financial basis that allowed us to go out and buy, you know, 5,000 iPads in a day. Boom. Because we need it. You know, we've built a technology division and sort of force inside of the district that completely differently from most places is the sort of emergent sharing, engaging, enlisting culture setter. You know, usually technology doesn't serve that purpose, but in St. Vrain it does. And so, you know, they had a strong basis from 6 through 12. You know, the kids could, like, the next day say, all right, sure, well, we'll just log in and do what we normally do, you know, in school, you know, but we'll just be doing it from home. They just had to, you know, bring the elementaries up to date.
I'm going to dig a little deeper, and I get all this. Okay, what I'm curious about, and again, we're using Saint Vrain as the particular example in this case.
Yeah.
Okay. One of 8 or 9 districts who actually were researched and looked at this. I'm like, is it more? Wait, is it 70 or is it? You looked at 70,
it's 70
districts, right? Thank you. I don't know where I got 8 or 9 from. Okay, so 70 districts you looked at, and these were very resilient districts. All right.
Yep.
From what you just said, I have and I may be wrong here, that a lot of it was community building and communication that allowed them to be ready. Am I right or wrong?
Right. You are so right.
Okay. Yeah. And how they do that so well, and I work a lot with NSPRA, the School Public Relations Association,
mm-hmm.
which is the whole group that really wants to do this more than anybody else does. And I'll say this to everybody in this day and age. If you don't have a school PR person that's a professional, get one. Hire one.
Yes.
Okay? You got to know how to do this. Is it communication with the community? This is a whole big thing right now that makes a difference, and it should be always. Was that what you found? In other words, let me ask you in a different way. Linking what you found from 1 to 5, what were the key things that they were doing? Maybe that's the way to ask.
So what you were just pointing to is one of them. They had
deliberately
set out 16, 17 years ago when a new superintendent, an internal person, he'd been a middle school principal. They named him superintendent. His name is Don Haddad. He's still there. And he's got a great team around him. Don had a vision for completely replacing what had been a broken narrative that defined the relationship between the district and its communities, which he said, at the time was basically, we need more money. We're not going to give you more money, but we need more money. So how does he do that? He doesn't just issue a memo, he enlists a whole lot of community leaders, employers, workforce development folks, parents, educators, and others. And they all come up with a joint vision in which the success of the whole valley is tied directly to the success of the school district. If we want our valley to be economically, culturally, and humanly viable and successful, then our school district has to be, a protagonist in that story. And what does that look like? It sure doesn't look like what we've had here for the last 10 years or so, before 2007, whatever they started.
Right.
And so, all of that then translates into what, any of your listeners can see. If they Google St. Vrain Valley School District and go to their site, you'll see like 4 or 5 different levels of community engagement there and with different sort of intensity levels of participation and volunteerism, but they've committed to something called Leadership St. Vrain. It's an amazing commitment by the district. They bring in 20 to 24 leaders from the community, including sometimes, some of the doubters. They want them inside the tent. Let's bring them in, and once a month for 3.5 hours on a Saturday morning, we're going to just show them everything. Here's how budgeting works in our district. Here's how our curricular program works. Here's how our teacher learning, and so they're basically, preparing leaders in the community to just understand what they're grappling with and how they're doing it. And then there's 3 or 4 levels below that reach many, many more people, but with lesser levels of commitment. This is how they have fostered a feeling there that, we're all on the same team here. And right now, how many school districts are able to say that,
What do you think?
So
actually, answer your own question. There's 12,000 school districts, okay?
Yeah.
Just percentage-wise, yeah. What do you think? How many school districts are actually really doing that?
At the level that St. Vrain is doing it, I would say less than 5%.
Wow.
At a level where they could, they could say, yes, we have a pretty strong working collaborative relationship with our community. That's a really good question. And I right now, with coming out of COVID and with all of this stuff happening around CRT and everything else, I would almost hesitate to guess. I'd be afraid that I'd be guessing way too high, and that it is, in fact, much lower than that.
Yeah, that's CRT. I love those initials. Culturally relevant teaching or critical race theory. Take your pick. Okay,
right,
CRT.
One, I know.
Yeah, forget. Yeah, both making everybody. Right. It's amazing out there. So what is it? If you think it's 5%, all right. And now we got big problems out there with teacher retention and all that sort of stuff and SEL and all that. By the way, we're going to talk about SEL in a minute.
Okay.
What held? Superintendent Haddad, believe me, is probably a good guy. I'm actually going to get in touch with him. Okay, and I'll send him this show and all that sort of thing. Okay,
right.
That'll be, you can even introduce me if you know him well. Okay, I'll appreciate
that.
I'd love it. Okay, so they're getting it right. They got it right, and he probably knows a lot of terrific superintendents. Let's just use it in Colorado. He probably knows a lot of terrific superintendents, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But something held those districts back, okay? And what is it, Andy, do you think that has stopped until we actually needed it? They weren't prepared, all right?
Yeah.
What was it that stopped them before? Just talk about that.
Yeah.
I mean, they're all doing it now. They recognize it now, but it's late to the game. Okay?
Right.
And, what do you think?
Yeah. Well, so let's go back to the earliest part of this conversation and my observation about the waiting for guidance thing. Education is filled with amazing, fantastic, public-spirited, mission-driven people.
It is.
They are all living and working inside of systems that don't reflect what we know as human beings about, what kids should develop, in high school and what deep and powerful and enduring learning, looks like and feels like, right? And so, how many times do educators, say in one forum or another, I would like to do it this way, but X, Y, or Z system or contract prevents me from,
So, if you don't believe me, ask Franz Kafka. He'll tell you. Yeah. Bureaucracy.
You're right. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
We're all stuck in this Kafka-esque system that is perfectly resilient itself and capable of taking sort of all efforts to change it. And then it kind of like ingests it and digests it and turns it into a food group that it recognizes. And then it becomes sort of like somebody's incremental project that then disappears when the money dries up.
That's right.
Right. And so that largely speaking, I think is the answer to your question. Everybody when COVID hit, would have loved to have responded personally and through their organization the way Sunnyside or St. Vrain did. We all want to be part of that kind of thing. But, look at how our K-12 systems have worked now for generations, at the level of where kids are and what they experience, and nothing else really matters other than that. What are they doing? They're sitting there, and they are quickly taught that nothing really matters except what's going to be on the test, and so that's what I'll train myself to do, And so, are we surprised that that people coming out of our K-12 system, too many of them, aren't good parsers of complex information and aren't capable of making nuanced choices, right? And so, so the whole system is aligned around a hierarchical, compliance-based methodology that shows up as too much direct instruction in the classroom, and as too much just, absolutely straightforward industrial-era bureaucracy in the ways most school district works, right?
Mm.
It's all like super aligned. That's why it's so resilient and so able to, snap people back to the quote unquote norms. So that's why people get caught. And even like really, really good educators will say, well, the responsible thing to do now is wait for guidance. Because that's the system that they've been part of for their whole lives. At the same time, and excuse me for just barging along like this, but this is important.
No, do it.
The last thing we wanted to do with this project was to come out with something to say, all right, all of you folks in K-12 education who are feeling kind of gloomy coming off of this school year and Omicron and everything else, we want you to feel even gloomier because look at these
kind of gloomy.
Yeah. Right. So if we say, feel gloomier because you're not in this cool kid club where they responded in this way because their organizations are so full of agency and distributed leadership and everything else. No, what we're saying is, every one of you, every last of those 12 or 13,000 school districts has stories of super inventive, often highly collaborative problem solving during these 2 years. It's all over. But those stories have been swamped by stronger narratives about dysfunction and about disarray and about argument and about lost kids and now about learning loss and all of that. And so
people always talk, I'll just use my line, people always talk about learning loss, and I always say people are mixing up learning loss with curriculum loss. There's a big difference between the two things. The kids didn't lose as much learning as we think they did. We just have to rearrange the test to accept the fact that they didn't have the best 2 years in school in the world. They learned plenty. They'll be fine.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm convinced.
Exactly. Right. Yes.
I'm convinced.
Right. I'm with you on that.
Thank you.
And so. So, what we hope is that any educator hearing this show, going to nextgenlearning.org, finding this project, What Made Them So Prepared, will go to there's a page on it called Use This Now. And on the Use This Now page, there are all these ideas born out of what we observed and heard from these schools and districts that we studied about how they took, little examples of inventive, collaborative problem solving and innovation, and over time helped those develop into their operating norms so that they weren't sort of the outlying exceptions. They became like, oh yeah, this is how we do things here. Right. And that's all they did. Every school district has the possibility of making that happen. And there's no difference between what I'm talking about here and the way we talk about good, strong, powerful learning that is strengths-based rather than deficit-based, right? If a school district wants to move out of this, do they dwell on what went wrong and everyone's sort of gloomy mood right now?
Yeah.
Well, I'm guessing that wouldn't be super successful, but if they said, all right, please, God, let's hope we're coming out of this now, and that maybe the next school year is one where it actually starts to feel reasonably normal, let's not let a good crisis go to waste, and then let's look at what did happen well in our district You know, let's take that strengths-based approach and and understand why that happened. Why did this story happen here?
Keyword.
Why did that school serve its kids so well? Why, And then let's build on those things and then, you know, start to set our wheel in motion so that it becomes the flywheel of, you know, how we do things here. The
you
way
know,
they talk about themselves in Sunnyside.
It's interesting you're saying all this because, and you keep using the word educators. One of the key, I think you used the word is agency. I'm not sure you did. I have to go back. Yeah, agency is the first one. Okay. And when we're very involved these days in teacher retention, okay, over here at h-ed.org and teacher-retention.com, we're trying to really make this happen, okay?
Yeah.
And when you ask teachers, and I learned this from friends of mine at the Qualtrics company, when you literally ask teachers what's the problem these days, what do they need, what's making them unhappy, they say they don't have enough agency, okay? You said it a minute ago. There are great things happening, a lot of great educators, and it gets stifled in the bureaucracy. Okay, but you're dealing with college-educated, many of them with master's degrees and beyond, okay, well-educated people who are in the trenches all the time down there.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
And they know what they know what's going on. And, you know, these are all the things, and we're also involved in this, and I'm curious about this. Social emotional learning, these things you're talking about, critical thinking, collaborative problem solving, caring, okay, agency, that's all part of this social emotional learning thing, all right?
Yeah.
And is that I'm trying to grab everything you put in the thing. Is that what we have to do? We have to refocus how we treat our teachers and then carry that into how we actually run a district? I'm trying to just focus it down. I don't know. I don't know if I'm asking the question properly, but it's my thought right now.
Yeah, no, you are, and this also there's a short crosswalk between that question and the focus of your organization, Equity, and how all of this work connects into equity-seeking work in education.
Yeah.
Because, you know, what we were studying here was what it looks like when organizations, school districts and schools are living their vision out loud. They're not instituting SEL, social emotional learning, or equity as a project, you know, that is now going to be yet another thing added to the heap of stuff that teachers already have to do. And you're going to learn all about how to do equity or do SEL in a 90-minute, you know, after-school workshop.
That's going to work.
Right.
Yeah. That's going to work. Yeah.
They are at the root of both of those things, SEL and agency, is really the sort of art and science of knowing every kid really well, right? You know, if you are committed to knowing every kid really well, then almost by definition, you're ahead of the game in terms of like thinking about the social and emotional learning trajectory for that kid, and you're ahead of the game in terms of thinking about what that child needs uniquely to that child to make sure that he or she has the same opportunity to advance and thrive to their fullest potential, we have a penchant in education as well as other sectors in America to compartmentalize things, and, this is all the sort of system engineering, mentality, which has done great things and sent a man to the moon and, all of that sort of stuff. But, education, like healthcare, is a complex business more than a complicated one, meaning it involves lots of people who are independent decision makers. And guess what? Sometimes they don't respond in the way you thought they would on your white, you systems designer. And so, at the sort of galactic level, when the U.S. made our turn towards the standards movement, I mean, there was a like there was a great idea at the
yeah,
root of that.
Yeah, by the way, we've got about 3 minutes
left.
We've got about 3 minutes left there. They just say, you know, yeah.
Good. So, that was, let's hold, every kid, no matter what zip code they live in, to the same high standards. You know, who's going to argue with that? That's great.
Nobody.
But then what it turned into was, how are we going to define that and measure it? And let's define it around what we think we know how to measure. And by the way, that's just this kind of test and in only math and ELA. And so we thought, good things would happen because of that. And in fact, a generation of pretty bad test preppy kind of practice was the result. Over there in Finland at the same time, late 80s, early 90s, into the early aughts, they said, the only thing we're confident about is that a lot of learning varies with the quality of the teacher and the professional in the classroom. So let's put all of our marbles right there. And so they closed down 3/4 of their teacher colleges. They made teaching a super highly competitive profession to get into.
Yep.
They spend 7 years preparing teachers to take over their own classroom. And so now those teachers are capable of working with kids in equitable and social emotional learning informed ways, just because it's part of the natural, course of their practice that they have developed. And they're really capable and they're really well supported to do that. So that's two different approaches, and we really seem to have ended up with two different kinds of outcomes here.
Well, there are ways to make it happen. St. Vrain, Sunnyside, and these other 60 districts you worked on, can show the way. And by the way, just so everybody knows, it's nextgenlearning.org, but I just Googled what made them so prepared, and boom, it popped right up, just so you know that.
Excellent.
Okay, I have it linked.
Yeah.
I have it linked right on site here. Okay, but Andy, we got to go. We can do more, and I'll get in touch with you, Gloucester man, okay? I'll let you get back to fishing for tuna. I know. Good luck with that, by the way, the tuna fishing.
All right. Thank you, Larry. Really appreciate it.
Again, you'll hear from me. I want to meet Dan Haddad, so this is really good stuff. Thank you, Andy.
Great.
I hate to cut you
You're
off.
Welcome.
We just got to go, okay?
That's okay.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Andy Calkins, everybody, from nextgenlearning.org. This is cool. I didn't know these folks, so this is really a nice thing, okay? And again, you can Google what made them so prepared to look at 70 districts that actually had it in place to be prepared for COVID more so than so many others. So check it all out. It's interesting stuff. And like I mentioned here, it's a whole new paradigm. And it's the way we train teachers, the way we appreciate teachers, okay? And if we do that, we're going to be able to retain teachers, all right? And pay them better. I must say that as well. All right, we're going to archive over at ace-ed.org. Check out what we're doing at teacher-retention.com, seltoday.org, et cetera. I'm Larry Jacobs. Thanks for listening.